Refugee groups say the deal with PNG is at odds with the principles of the Refugee Convention, which Australia is a signatory, and it carries many questions, including the capacity of PNG to handle the thousands of asylum seekers arriving by boat every month. James Hathaway is a professorial fellow at the University of Melbourne and an expert on international refugee law. He joins us from Vancouver this morning. James Hathaway, welcome back to RN Breakfast.
Thanks very much, Fran.
What's your reaction to Kevin Rudd's plan to send all of Australia's asylum seekers who arrive by boat to PNG?
Well, Fran, Australia's not alone in trying to do nasty things to asylum seekers. But I have to tell you that this plan is without question the most bizarre overreaction I have seen in more than 30 years of working on refugee law. It just makes no sense. I mean, the first point, you know, you probably noticed it, and your introduction made this clear. The only mandatory deportation to PNG is going to be so-called boat arrivals.
Mm-hmm.
Does the Prime Minister think that every refugee should arrive with a Qantas first-class ticket in order to be real? I mean, it's the most extraordinarily bizarre singling out of the group, if you think about it for a second, ought to be the very group that we should care about the most, the people who are so desperate, who so fear for their loss of life that they're prepared to put their fate into the hands of smugglers and take a horrible boat journey to survive, are the very ones that Australia seems to want to punish, the most vulnerable of the vulnerable, which is just bizarre.
Part of the argument, the government says it wants to stop those boats, and they don't put it in terms of punishment, not surprisingly, is they say it's humane, it's compassionate, because people are dying at sea. We have had 1,100 people drown on the way to Australia since 2008.
And this has been a problem not just in Australia. It's been a problem in the Mediterranean, the Caribbean, and elsewhere. It's something that is a problem that, quite frankly, Australia and other developed countries created. If you were to go back 20 or 30 years ago, Fran, this wasn't happening. Why? Because we didn't have visa controls and carrier sanctions on people who wanted to come and seek asylum as the convention that Australia has signed allows them to do. They simply showed up. Smugglers have no market. We've made it virtually impossible for people to get there legally, and when you do that, a smuggling market crops up. And so to shed these crocodile tears about people drowning at sea when Australia and other developed countries created the market for the smugglers strikes me as more than a bit rich. But beyond that, the convention itself says that you can't penalize refugees for arriving without authorization. There is no visa that Australia or anybody else gives for a person to come seek asylum. So to take people who are doing only exactly what the refugee convention that Australia helped to draft and signed by coming and asking for asylum and dumping them into the hellhole of PNG is, in my view, both an illegal penalty and a discriminatory penalty, which puts Australia in breach of the convention on two points.
In just that term, whether we're in breach of convention under that point, which says a contracting state shall not impose penalties on the account of their illegal entry, is it a penalty if we're sending people who arrive here by boat to another country that is also a signatory to the convention?
Well,
why is that a penalty?
That's a complicated question. Yeah, well, first of all, it's a penalty in the sense that it treats them negatively by virtue of having arrived without a visa. What the Prime Minister is saying is, if you arrive in this manner without permission, you will be punished for it. If you were to arrive with, you know, a false student visa at Tullamarine Airport, we're not sending you to PNG. You'd presumably go into the process. It's the boat people who seem to have attracted his ire. I mean, in terms of whether it's a penalty, you don't need to think very hard, I think, about what awaits them in PNG. We're talking about a country that ranks 168th in the world in terms of life expectancy, where more than half the country doesn't have sanitation or clean water. One in two women in PNG have been raped. Homosexuals can go to jail for 14 years. This is where we're going to send people who have done nothing wrong other than have the courage to say that they don't want to be persecuted for who they are in the country where they lived.
Just on that front, because the Minister for Immigration, Tony Burke, has been asked about this in over the last couple of days, and on in terms of the capacity for PNG to cope with this and also the conditions on the ground in PNG. Here's his answer to one element of that. Let's have a listen to Tony Burke speaking on Insiders yesterday.
Let's make clear, the commitment under the convention is not for people to be able to move to a country with a particular average income. The commitment of the convention is for people to be safe and to be free from persecution. And the Australian government will assist Papua New Guinea in making sure those commitments can be met.
So if Australia says it will assist Papua New Guinea in meeting those commitments to be safe and to be duly processed, and PNG does have a processing system under the that seems to be in, under the auspices of the Refugee Convention, can it argue that it is providing the protection, though, that the convention demands?
No, and that's the this is the same as is found in the text of the agreement that I've just read. The government seems to think that its only obligation under the convention is to make sure that somebody at risk of being persecuted doesn't get sent back to persecution. That argument is what the government put to the High Court of Australia in the Malaysia case. And the High Court quite explicitly rejected that argument. It said that the duty of non-refoulement, the duty not to send you back to persecution, obviously is a critical agreement.
Which stands under this agreement, yes.
Yes, but it said, and I quote, those protections include but are not limited to protection against refoulement, and the court mentioned protection against discrimination, religious freedom, access to the courts, the right to work, to education, to internal movement, and there is not one word in this agreement about any of those rights, much less, as the Chief Justice insisted in the decision, a legally binding process to enforce those rights. The word rights doesn't even appear in the agreement that the Prime Minister of Australia signed with the Prime Minister of PNG. That's what makes it illegal. Not that one couldn't share out with another state on the terms that the convention mandates. That's clearly permissible. But that's not what this agreement suggests.
It's 7:45 on Breakfast. Our guest this morning is Professor James Hathaway. He's an international expert on refugee law. James Hathaway, the government's clearly tried to address some of the concerns that featured in the High Court decision you just mentioned. Point 7 of this arrangement signed by Papua New Guinean President and Kevin Rudd goes to the fact that PNG will withdraw its reservations to the convention as regarding people transferred there from Australia. And that means it will take away its reservations about duties to provide education, housing and health facilities to the to these people. And the Australian Attorney General said he is confident that Australia is not in breach of its international obligations under the convention.
Well, then the Australian Attorney General is wrong, and he should look carefully at the judgment of the Chief Justice of Australia that made clear that rights that are not enforceable are not rights at all. If the Attorney General believes that this agreement can be enacted in a way that complies with that interpretation of international law rendered by the High Court, that it actually will not only guarantee the rights in formal terms, but make them practically enforceable, then he ought to have put an agreement forward that said precisely that. And, may I add, no returns should be affected until and unless that system is in place. You don't put the cart before the horse, as this agreement says it can do.
It's not yet clear if asylum seekers who are processed in PNG will have any recourse to Australian courts. And in your view, does the convention have anything to say about that?
Well, as soon as a person comes under the jurisdiction of a state party, and that could be by being pulled on board an Australian boat in international waters, there's an obligation to provide access to the courts of the state party that takes jurisdiction. So it will depend on how this is done. If there were to be no Australian ships involved and it were to be done exclusively in international waters, I suspect international law would not be very friendly to an argument that Australian courts were mandatorily engaged. But if Australia does directly or indirectly manage the process or use its ships, or indeed if it happens in its waters, I think international law would see it quite differently.
So under this agreement, Australia has, for instance, agreed to provide short health, security and identity check in Australia.
Yeah. And if you actually look at the case law coming out of international courts on the meaning of jurisdiction, that's precisely the kind of linchpin that courts have increasingly found to give rise to jurisdiction and therefore to responsibility. So I think Australia is trying to have it both ways. It's trying to maximize its control and minimize its liability, and what international law is increasingly saying is that you can't have it both ways. If you want control, you have responsibility. If you don't want control, then responsibility doesn't follow.
Australia attracts 3% of the world's refugee population. In this case, it's, in a sense, buying out a neighbour, I guess, or outsourcing rather than handling the problem itself, which to some degree we've been doing with the Pacific Solution for some years now. To your knowledge, has this happened anywhere else in the world like this, quite like this?
No. This is completely unprecedented. I mean, other countries, when they've acted badly toward refugees, normally say one of two things. They either say, we're being completely overwhelmed, or they say, the people who are showing up aren't genuine refugees at all. They're just migrants in refugee clothing. And Fran, what is most striking about the Prime Minister's statement is that he made neither of those arguments, quite frankly, because he couldn't, at least not with a straight face. Now, the actual number is that Australia gets about one-half of 1% of the world's refugees. And even the 30,000 arrivals last year only placed Australia 20th as among 44 industrialized countries. It's a totally average, absolutely manageable number. There is no crisis.
And secondly, what
is really striking about this, Fran, is Australia, unlike any other developed country I know, has been attracting almost exclusively genuine refugees as boat arrivals. Of the boat arrivals for the last 4 years, by the government's own statistics, 94% of them have been found to people who have a genuine fear of persecution. So Australia does not have an asylum problem. Australia has a political problem, and refugees are being made to pay the price for Kevin Rudd wanting to appear, I think, more butch than Julia Gillard and more reactionary than Tony Abbott so that he can keep his place in the Liberal Party leadership and hopefully win the next election. This is not a refugee problem.
Just briefly on that fact, it is a political problem. I think you're quite right. That's how the parties view this. And on that 94% genuine refugees, the Labor government is questioning that. But also, it's hoping to convince other countries to take asylum seekers. We've talked about burden sharing and other countries, coming together and agreeing to take more. Is there any chance this could form a basis of a regional solution to the unauthorized flow of people?
And hopefully a global one. And by the way, the stats that I quoted come from the department's own numbers, so I'm shocked that the government would question them. But look, the conference that the Prime Minister talks about has a couple of good ideas behind it. One, he says this is going to be within the framework of the Refugee Convention. Second, he says, let's deal with issues of processing, resettlement, regional arrangements. Great ideas. And I've been arguing for 20-plus years that we need to update the mechanisms of the convention, not the obligations, but the mechanisms. But then you look a little more closely at what he's actually proposed, right? He says he wants to invite, and I quote, relevant transit countries and destination countries. Well, who's that? If you really want to fix the Refugee Convention, if you really want to assist states to shoulder their burdens and responsibilities effectively, we should be inviting the Pakistans, the Jordans, the Turkeys, the states that really need and deserve solidarity. This should be a global conference, not a little regional conference to help Australia manage one half of 1% of the world's refugees. It would be fabulous if the Prime Minister would actually stand up, call the conference, and stand in solidarity with everyone receiving refugees so that the rules of the game could be updated. But what he's proposed here, Fran, is to change the rules of the game before he gets that agreement with this PNG thing. It's like showing up at a football match and somebody tells you that the field is now half as long and you're playing with a different ball, but it should still be called football. And that's false. It's disingenuous. It's not worthy of Kevin Rudd. Let him show the leadership that he believes is right and let him do it at a global level.
James Hathaway, thank you very much for joining us on Breakfast.
You're most welcome.